This is the final podcast of a series of four, which follow a conversation in fashion and sustainability held between Kate Fletcher and Mike Barry. It was recorded on the 27th of April 2012, and this podcast follows issues related to recycling.
When I had the question, I think why is it's about the shopping concept, and that this is a new way of collecting clothing, and that it's amazing for M&S to be doing it in store, and that is all true. Except I don't think it's a new way of getting clothing. There was a huge fight for secondhand textiles in this country that is aggressive and vicious. And if somebody has a single item of clothing in their wardrobe that they don't want, there's probably about 20 people waiting at their door to grab it off them and take that value.
And so, yet a billion items are still going to landfill.
And that's another, I just want to know where you got that figure from, because I've had a problem trying to get a new figure out of Desborough. I know that a lot of that clothing is extremely poor quality, that it's difficult to get any value out of. So it's just, I guess, my problem is with that this shopping is something new. It's not new. It's on every high street corner. We've got 1,500 banks for people.
Basically, it's a really good point. Let's address it. I think what we're saying is the current model of encouraging people to recycle has reached its natural plateau.
Do you think so? Because I think that every time I open the news, I see a new plateau being reached. And last week, one of our drivers got hit over the head with a metal bar to take his clothing out of his hand.
Whoa.
Wow. There's new heights every day on people trying, rags for cash for rags.
Sure.
Has just come south. It was in the north, and now we see you can get money back.
Sorry, Mike.
Just 30 seconds on. I think, again, we go back to this elegant phrase of wardrobe obesity. There are a significant number of good clothes that people are not even contemplating recycling, that they're hoarding and gathering. So what we've got is two problems. We've got all the very low-value rags that are just being chucked, and no one's finding a smart way of extracting value from them yet. And then we've got this wardrobe obesity of things that people are semi-attached to, not sort of got the excuse to get rid of it, and swapping is a way of kick-starting and jump-starting people to say, you know what, I don't really need it. There is a better way of using it. Out it goes. So people have recycled clothes for hundreds if not thousands of years, and will always do so. And what we're saying is swapping is just an emotional way of connecting the M&S customer to 21 million people to take it to the next level, because we've made it so simple and clear about what they have to do. Will it change the world on its own? No, it won't. Lots of good people are working in this space, of course they are.
Yeah.
But we just hope we can jumpstart it and push on to the next level.
And what I'll say, just adding to that, which I found quite interesting, is that I'm kind of ties in with what Kay's saying about people keeping things. There was some research done not that long ago that was looking at how people behave with the clothes that they no longer want, and the extremely extended process of taking them out of the wardrobe, putting them into a bag, taking them to the front door, putting them in the attic, putting them in the cellar, and the actual length of time it was taking people to kind of make that decision and hand something over. So I guess it is just about, it's not that, of course, anyone who works in this space knows that secondhand textiles are extremely valuable and it's big business, but it's actually how can we, facilitate that business being more effective by actually getting people to hand stuff over that's of value when they're not valuing it themselves.
I would also just supplement that by saying that. Supplement that by saying that actually at the moment people generally find it hard to get rid of stuff, particularly in drip sort of way. People tend to store stuff up and then get rid of it in as a sort of a purge. They find it easier that way, and perhaps that's part of the problem that's been leading to this sort of congestion in wardrobes. So maybe this is an opportunity to start a new method of people feeling, oh yeah, I can just get rid of that.
I want to expand on this because it's a really important point, Kate. Is the inertia we've got at the moment functional? I can't bother, I don't know how to do it. Or is it emotional? When a push comes to shove, I do want to keep that garment after all. What do you think is playing out in the consumer's mind?
I think there's no one consumer. You can't imagine it's the same for everybody. I think there's lots of different things. I think when you look at what the reason why people buy new things and then the reason why people discard old things, evidence suggests that it's changing body shape and a sort of a, you keep things because you hope that maybe you can squeeze back into it. And there's,
and sometimes you can.
And so I think that that's one of the things. And another thing that makes people discard, which is about the garment actually wearing out. And I know that sounds quite hard. I mean, certainly when you sort of think about fashion being the force of obsolescence and its aesthetic change, and the garment itself is still wearable. But actually, the two things that seem to persuade people to discard are both changing body shape and things wearing out or no longer being good enough. And then fashion, of course, is part of that. But I think that that's interesting, because actually we always are hoping that perhaps we are more like we were a few years ago when we were still younger. So I think it's tied very much. It's not, it probably is functional, small elements of functional sort of, I can't get to a bank to drop this off, but it's mainly about who you are. It's mainly your psyche.
And it may be that emotional connection that we're celebrating within, you know, certain garments isn't always actually, shouldn't actually be celebrated. Something should be handed on, and that emotional connection is causing you to hold on to something that really there's no reason why you should.
So there's been a real shift from seeing an intrinsic value into the, and the materials of goods, to largely it being about brand value. And so there's been a sort of a replacement of what is of value. And I suppose swapping, in Scouse accent, works, works to reinforce perhaps more of the material value, which is essential. Because... So sort of the title of this talk was sort of framed as new materialism. And it's a phrase that I like to use quite a lot, because actually it sort of says, you know, even though we've got so much stuff, completely sort of swimming in stuff, actually the problem is that we're not materialistic enough. And this is because we don't actually revere materials. We don't really value things. And we're, you know, all the costs of making whatever it is, a denim jacket, are all externalised. Yeah. They're not actually within the cost of the piece itself. And I think that addressing those issues and revaluing material goods and seeing them as part, an intrinsic and valuable part of sustainability, is essential, as well as also looking at ways to dematerialise other aspects.
And that's such an elegant way of putting it. And then again, I'll put my functional and additional to your very, very important point so well. And I think that's why businesses are starting to willingness to contemplate change, because we've been through a cycle of 20, 30 years where materials were commodities. They were dirt cheap. You could get any cotton, any polyester you wanted at the price that you wanted to pay as a brand or a retailer. Those days are gone. The competition for resources that's now emerging with China and India, but also in terms of the pressure of climate change restricting availability, means that those commodities are no longer low-cost commodities, the materials that have a value and a risk an opportunity to use a brand, both in terms of how much you use and how efficiently you use in the supply chain, the functional bit, and how much you want to recover them and get value from the second time around. So again, it's a very functional way of looking at it, but a business language that meets your emotional challenge, that's why businesses are etching towards you in the way that even 2 years ago they weren't. It has a value to business as well, that material now, it's not just a commodity.
Yeah. Businesses are edging towards you, Kate.
Oh, this is amazing. And this has been very long as I edge back.
This has been a long time.
I mean, for those of you who just joined us slightly late, I mean, I'm back from MS. Kate started challenging us 10 years ago to think different about clothes. So that, you know, Kate and I used to have quite a lonely conversation over a breakfast. It was just me and nodding my head and saying, "I agree with you, but business won't listen." Over the last decade, I've seen a business that, by and large, Kate's ideas and challenges have been proven to be right. And you say, we keep coming back to how quickly and effectively we can implement them, and it will never be as quick as you would like, and I'll do it in a much more functional way than you like. But that challenge has helped us get this far. Now, again, as for those who have just joined us, we talked about swapping that we've just launched, being version 2.0 of creating sustainable clothing. There are a couple of versions that lie ahead, 3.0, 4.0, to be truly sustainable. But swapping is a really important step on that helps the consumer engage with all the sustainability issues to do with clothing, rather than to do at the moment, just leave M&S to sort all those factories and dye house and cotton fields out. It puts the consumer right in the middle of the sustainability journey. And we're hoping that once they start to confront clothing, they'll start to confront a lot of the other material things that shape their lives at the moment. This is a way of thinking that can expand across many other things.
Yeah, it strikes me generally that, and you mentioned various other businesses, it's not obviously exclusive to M&S, but this thing of challenging your consumer is the challenge, really. Are you willing to kind of...
It's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, are you willing to step beyond that? What efficiencies can we implement to make things differently into a world where you don't have as much control, but you are asking much more difficult questions?
And this is why I think we as a predominantly British audience here, have to be very careful, because I think... Britain and Europe companies tend to be reasonably good at doing average corporate responsibility, getting 2% better each year and using less energy and less waste. And on average, they tend to be ahead of companies in other countries in the world. But the future is so dynamic and the step change that Kate's talking about is so big that actually the companies that could do that would be the most innovative, and they tend not to be British or European, certainly not the scale ones. And that's why American companies, a few of them, Indian companies, Chinese companies, Brazilian companies, these will be the ones that redefine consumption in the future, albeit right in the middle of this fevered consumption race that these countries are in. You know, China has just unleashed this incredible consumption of the last 2 or 3 years that will run for at least another decade in quite a scary way, doubling, tripling, tenfold increase in the amount of stuff that they consume. But in the middle of that, the most interesting companies of scale in the world will be not British, I would suggest. I think where Britain overplays and overbats, it's at this scale, what London College is doing, some of the work that you guys are doing around the room, that's why M&S is supporting and sponsoring this. We as a big beast don't have that mindset of those answers. We need these good answers to feed through to how we run our business in the future. I've got time for a couple more.
Yeah, let's have a couple more questions before we wrap up, Jen.
My question is about the role of the designer in the design process. And when we think about new business models being inspired by these take-back systems, could there be some kind of research done at the beginning of the life cycle so that clothing's redesigned with the intention of being reused or redesigned?
I'll give a few. Kate, do you want to also chip in a sec?
Well, yes, of course. But do you want to go first?
Yes. Yeah. So I would be very, very... Again, I am a functional boy in this setup. I've been set up to be just a functional What we saw exactly. We did exactly the same issue when we came to packaging. We had all kinds of problems at M&S with packaging. We've had to slash the amount we've used. But the biggest step on we took was to shift from using 11 mixed plastics materials. It made all the packaging material fundamentally unrecyclable because it was all overlaid and laminates. We've moved to as far as possible using 3 pure materials on their own, not mixed. And that's made these things incredibly more recyclable. The route forward, again, in a functional sense, for us is probably to start using pure raw materials as best we can. As soon as you start putting 2% lycra and stretch in, it gets so much harder to use the raw material in an upcycle or at least the same cycle sense. So I think there is an issue, functional issue for us about purity of material we use. There is also something about... there will be step change innovation. You know, some of the things that people are looking at now about taking colour out of fibre. So where you put the colour in the dye house, so it's black today, but it's unlockable, so you pass an electric current through it when you get it back, and the colour drops out and it becomes just the base fibre that you can re-dye and reuse. Now, a little bit space age, but you can imagine over the next 5 to 10 years, and this is where M&S does have a very good innovation capacity, you can start to see these technologies will emerge to enable recycling to happen more in the future. So that's the functional answer. It's the emotional one.
Okay, so, I mean, for, 15 years or so, I've been looking at design, design for sustainability in fashion and textiles, and certainly there's a list of design for disassembling, design for recycling criteria that are fairly well known, and they include monomaterials, they include all of the things that Mike is talking about, and it's really, really essential. In order to extract maximum value, you have to sort of build in a way of thinking about it that allows it to have multiple future lives. I absolutely think that's essential practice. And I would also say, but that you can't do that and think that that makes it all okay to continue to just consume it and then just chuck it. I mean, it really is unacceptable. Absolutely, what we need to do is to get people to use things for an extended, iterative, intense and joyful life. It can't just have a short life and just be chucked away because you know it can be recycled. It's the biggest justification for the existing business model that currently exists, and it's really unacceptable.